Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Welcome to The Conversation on this Aloha Friday, January 30th. Today we're bringing you a Hanaho show where marine debris floats center stage. Time is running out for a center in Kalihi that needs to find a new home. It's vital to continue their work to repurpose plastic garbage into construction material. And did you know that there's another practical way to reuse plastic waste, making a fashion and environmental statement with the flotsam showing up on our beaches? Mark Cunningham may be long retired from his lifeguard job, but he's still out there rescuing items along our coast. We'll explain. Plus, we look at how art and activism meld together for a local sculptor, creating work from garbage to highlight the effect plastics have on the natural world.
After all of this time, after all of these seasons, after your own decision to go to the water for reason, it's only the ocean and you.
You're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today we Hanaho stories about people who are giving a second life to trash collected from the ocean. Hawaii's only marine debris recycling center is running at full capacity. It opened in 2024. It's part of Hawaii Pacific University's Center for Marine Debris Research. And a full-time staff of four is turning plastic trawl nets into building materials, roads, and more. The Conversation's Maddie Bender stopped by the recycling center on a busy day last fall. She brings us the story.
HPU's plastic recycling research facility operates out of a nondescript warehouse in Kalihi. When I pull up, volunteers are loading salt-crusted fishing nets into the belly of a shipping container. Music is playing. It feels like a plastic party. I spot Jennifer Lynch, co-director of the center that manages the facility.
And we're about ready to try something new, where we're using the truck to lift this into the container instead of our backs. So it's a first trial, and we'll see how it goes.
Okay, how's it going so far?
This is try number two.
Yeah. A yellow ratchet strap hangs from the back of a pickup truck. On the other end, volunteers get ready to push a massive tangled ball of marine debris into the shipping container.
Okay, everyone be ready to push the pile in. It's caught on the knot.
A bit of regrouping, and the pickup truck gives it one last pull. Mafalda De Freitas runs the mega plastic program at the warehouse. She congratulates everyone on a job well done.
Well done, guys. Teamwork. Innovation.
So was that a success?
Yeah, that was a success. Some of this is incredibly hard. Incredibly heavy. And so it requires more than what our small team can handle. And so innovative use of the truck, dragging it in. We have a forklift that we usually power it all up with, because it's just very heavy, like dead weight. And so, yeah, that was awesome. And now we can just plop everything else over the top till they come and replace the roll-off bin.
So this today's nets come from the Papahanao Mokuakea Marine Debris Project. Only about 30% of the marine debris received by the facility gets recycled. The rest is loaded up in shipping containers like the one outside. Radius Recycling picks up full bins, shreds the contents, and takes it to H Power. There, it's incinerated to produce electricity. De Freitas walks through the life cycle of a piece of marine plastic that ends up at her facility.
So if stage one is when they're taking it out of the environment, stage two is when we receive it and we sort it into the different polymers. Polymers are different types of plastics. This is all trawl nets. It's not nets used in Hawaii. The Hawaii fisheries doesn't use this type of material. It's actually banned around Hawaii. And the longline fisheries uses monofilament longline. And it's not what we receive that actually, because it's so dense, it sinks in seawater. Whereas trawl nets float and they make their way around the Pacific Ocean to the North Pacific garbage patch, and then with the trade winds and the way ocean currents, gyres, slowly make their way to the Hawaiian Islands. Okay. So it's all foreign fishing gear, foreign trawl nets, mm-hmm. is what we're recycling here.
And so what determines what goes out there for the bin versus what stays in here to be recycled?
A lot of what we receive is completely mixed, different polymers. So the lines, for example, are made out of different plastics. And so that will go outside to the bin to be incinerated. In here, we just keep the HDPE nets. Try not to keep any other type of plastic, just because we're still starting up. We're small. We don't have the capacity to sort, for example, mixed nets that are made up of HDPE and another type of plastic. And so what comes inside is just the HDPE. However, there is also some HDPE that ends up getting put in the roll-off bin to get sent to H Power if it's too dirty, if it has too much biofouling in it. It just makes it a lot harder to have to clean and recycle. And so we pick the easiest, the lowest hanging fruits mm-hmm. right now.
Could you describe what's on the ground in front of us right now just to a listener?
Yeah, so in front of us, we have a colorful large pile of trawl nets. The nets are what you imagine a large fishing net to be made up. They've got some of the different thicknesses than others, depending on how deep the fisheries is setting them. And they are made up of this HDPE plastic that we are recycling. We have some really great bright orange ones. Predominantly, they're made out of green netting. If they're used closer to the sea floor, I might be wrong, but my understanding of it is that they're usually darker. Just make it harder for the fish to see, is what I've been told happens. So right here in front of us, we have a huge mix of different colors of fishing nets, of different diameters. And yeah, that we will now be sorting through to take out some of the lines that shouldn't be in there. There's some bits of hard plastic that are just entwined in it that we'll also have to take out. And then we'll put it into super sacks so then we can shred and then proceed to the next stages of the recycling process.
We can talk about each of those steps, because I imagine that machine
is
involved. Yeah. It looks like a roller coaster.
It does look like a roller coaster. It is our very large shredder. We share the facility with Eopala, which is the island's e-waste recycler. They are the owner of this warehouse. They got too big for it and moved elsewhere and let us take over their space, and very kindly left their shredder that we share with them. And so we use that to shred. It starts all the way over there in the back room with a conveyor belt, and there's a lot of conveyor belts attached together. So that conveyor belt leads up to the main shredder there. So it goes up the top, it drops down. There's some wheels with teeth on it that grind it all down. It then goes into another conveyor belt where it goes up, and you can be there. So if there's something that shouldn't be in there, you can kind of take it out. If there's a bit of hard plastic, if there's a bit of line, you're like, oh, nope, that's snuck in there. And then it drops down the chute at the end into some super sacks. We'll then tie it off and store it until it's ready to be converted into something.
So that is essentially where the life cycle ends for this facility.
For this facility, yes, right now. For this facility, it ends at the shredded stage. We are looking to bring machinery to continue on the other stages to into a final product. Okay. We are collaborating right now with a company in Omaha, Nebraska that makes plastic lumber. We sent them 400 pounds of our shredded nets, and they have made four different recipes. So one for their boards, and so one is using 100% our fishing nets, and then the other one was 75% our fishing nets and 25% their post-consumer waste, so your household products you put for recycling. The third recipe was 50-50. And then the fourth recipe was 80% our fishing nets and 20% hard plastic that we receive from beach cleanups. And all boards have proven really successful. They're really impressed with the results. And so what we want to do now is bring those machines here so that we can make those boards here on island. So we don't have to send all these shredded nets to the mainland and then wait to receive boards back. We can just keep this closed loop mm-hmm. circular economy here and produce boards and products in general here on island. So we moved in here in June of 2024. Before this, we had a small, we called the net shed. It was this shell of a warehouse at the Hawaii Pacific University lower campus over on the windward side. We then moved here to this facility in June of 2024. It is owned by Eopala, the island's e-waste recycler who outgrew this and are partnering with us to help us with the business side. How would this work? How does recycling in general work, having access to a shredder as well? So they were very kind to let us move in. And we have really taken over, also outgrown, very rapidly outgrown this facility. Because as you see, every shipment that we bring in, it's a 20 to 40 foot containers worth of material that takes up the entire warehouse that we then have to sort through. Before Eopala was here, this used to be a noodle factory, I think. So if you see like the holes and the pipes on the ceiling, that's how they ventilated the room to dry out the noodles. So it's had many stages, from noodles to e-waste to now marine debris recycling. But it's been a really great stepping stone to for us to learn a lot of protocols, how we need to sort, how to deliver, how to receive material, then once we shred it, sending it out. And so learning all the processes of how do we treat this marine debris so that we can recycle it. Unfortunately, because of funding limitations and cuts, our lease here is up at the end of November. We need to find a new home, not sure where we will go. We're currently in a sprint to fundraise because the funding for this project for recycling all this marine debris ends in March of 2026. We had applied for a NOAA Marine Debris Project funding for $10 million that we felt very confident for. That would help continue all of this effort together with our partners on PMDP, Kauai, Maui, and Big Island. So together with each of those, the funding would have continued us on for the next 4 years, which we unfortunately did not get. And so we learned that we didn't get it about a month ago now. And so, about 2 weeks ago, time is a blur at the moment. And so that has led us into a bigger scramble of, what do we do now? And that's when our partner helps with, we can stay until the end of November. And then now we're reaching out to everybody that we know and asking everybody to reach out to their friends and their contacts, even if it's just land space that we can then set up some makeshift construction to keep this going, because we really don't want to see this stop. It's such important work that is happening, and so we're confident that it'll pull through. It's too important for people not to care and not to want to see it continue.
And is it just the space, or is there question over funding for some of the staff positions or like your own position?
Yeah, so it's for everything, not just the space. So all of our team, the entire center for marine debris research, not just this warehouse, so the lab site that we have as well. So it's all of our staff, and the projects that we have will end in March if we can't secure more funding to keep this important work going. And the microplastic side, which is based over on the Makapu'u campus, they do really important work in terms of monitoring and measuring microplastic quantities, additives, leaching, a lot of things that impact human health as well. And so it's two branches of this problem that we tackle that are super important, that we are in need of funding to help support and keep going. Obviously, with small bits of help, we can make do, but funding for everybody's salaries will end in March.
You're talking about this in a very like level-headed way, but this sounds big and scary and existential.
It is definitely big and scary and very sad. I'm a hopeless optimist. I feel too passionate about this to think that others won't feel passionate about this, especially once they come and see the extent of what we receive, the quantities that we receive, the hard work that goes into it. And just to think that all of this, before it was here, it was out in the environment. It was out in the ocean. It was trapping seabirds. It was trapping the monk seals that are now, pupping. And so this has such negative impacts on our planet that how can people not care? And so I'm very positive that somebody will care just as much, even if it's not a tenth of what I care. and we'll pull through and that something will happen. Not everybody in the team is as optimistic and level-headed as I am. I try to lead by example, and just if everybody's running around panicking, then nothing will get done. So let's do this one step at a time, one bridge at a time, and it's too important for people not to care. And so I'm confident that even if it's at the 11th hour, something will pull through. It's not over till the fat lady sings. And so I'm going to make sure I gag her so she doesn't.
That was Mafalda De Freitas, the Megaplastics Program Director at the Center for Marine Debris Research at HPU and HPR's Maddie Bender. The story originally aired last September. The Plastic Recycling Research Facility was recently awarded a $70,000 grant from the Ocean Conservancy Global Ghost Gear Initiative to continue its derelict fishing gear bounty program through summer of 2026. They remain hopeful they can find a new facility before their lease runs out in March. Beach cleanups take place all the time across the state. But what do you do with all that plastic once it's been collected? Do we have a recycling story for you? A Kailua optometrist took this idea and ran with it. Brian Daniel Moore and his wife, Dr. Lauren Mordu, opened Out to Sea. The company offers the opportunity for you to walk in with a bag of beach plastic and walk out with new eyeglass frames. The Conversation's D.W. Gibson spoke with Moore about this novel idea.
My wife's an optometrist, and we open our own practice. It's a full-on vision eyewear boutique, and we wanted some way to tie in our own frame line, right? And we live in Kailua. We've been there for about 8 years, and there's just a lot of plastics on the beach. Everybody talks about it. There's beach cleanups all the time. It's great. You clean them up, and then they come right back, right? So it's great to clean them. And then what? Where do they go? And everyone's kind of like, yeah, we don't really know what happens with them. And we thought, you know, it'd be great. There are actually kind of some pretty colors in the plastics, right? You have these turquoise and blues and reds. And could we make something out of this? And that kind of led into, well, or an optometry practice, it would make sense to make frames, right? But mostly it was about connecting to what's around you. Because we buy products now, we don't really know where they come from. They're kind of inexpensive. They break. We buy another one. Doesn't really care. We'll spend a little bit of money, but we just keep spending more and more money on them. And then we create more and more waste. But how could we feel connected to a product? And what better way to feel connected than a beach you love? Removing that plastic. No one wants the plastic there. Removing that plastic from the beach you love and then using it in an effective way and feeling connected to it through every day, through actually seeing the world a little bit differently through a pair of lenses. And this two kind of cool things that happen with that. One, you feel emotionally connected to the products that you have. You can actually build the product at Out to Sea. So then that's another kind of emotional connection to a product when you actually build it and it works and you've created it. You feel a good sense of self-worth over it. Then that plastic that is on your face is not on your beach, right? So it's just a little bit, but it's a nice reminder that that plastic's not in a bird's mouth, it's not in a turtle's mouth, it's not an eyesore on the beach. And it's also a conversation starter in a way. So that was the idea. And then I have a background in photography, filmmaking, storytelling, and I thought it would be a fun test to see, can we create a brand and a story around this? That's where we came up with Reflect. And Reflect meaning reef, like from the reef, like this plastic floated across our reef. And then a Reflect, like, lenses, and then a Reflect on the problem. So it's kind of like a three-way name. And so we're trying to tie it all in. And we're working a deal with Hawaii Wildlife Fund where 10% of all the proceeds go back towards Hawaii. So we can keep this cycle going where those proceeds will go back to further beach cleanups, preservation of wildlife, but keeping it all in Hawaii. So the plastic comes from Hawaii. We built the machine here in Hawaii and proceeds that go from the profits go back to the community.
So many things packed into what you said there. All of the components you mentioned, the first place my mind goes to is the fact that you pointed out sometimes these little bits of plastic are beautiful, right? They're really wonderful colors.
Right.
My family's done beach cleanups. My wife sometimes will grab a select few pieces that she really likes and takes them home. And we have a little jar of beautiful small pieces of plastic.
Yeah.
So just to be clear for listeners, I can take that bowl of beautiful small plastics that my wife has gathered over time, show up at your doorstep of Out to Sea Optometry with an appointment, of course, and I can use that plastic to fashion my eyeglass wear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
You also brought up the fact that we might not even necessarily need all of this plastic in our life, but it's there, right? So we often talk about trying to reduce plastic use, but what you're talking about is plastic that's already out there in the universe that is gathering at our shoreline and doesn't necessarily have a place to go. And you bring up a good point. People often do beach cleanups and, you know, what to do with all that plastic actually remains a question. Mm-hmm. And this is a place where that material can go. You mentioned people can come in and build their own frames. Talk about how that actually happens, that hands-on experience.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're still pretty early in this process, so we don't have like a formalized way of doing it yet. But basically what happens is you can come in and you can bring in the plastics. We have plenty of plastics, so don't worry about having to bring plastic. But a lot of people want to bring like the pieces that they like. And then what we do is we mix it all up. We show you how the machine works. The machine, it's an injection mold. So we melt the plastic, we inject it into a mold, and then we can pop out the mold. And then we have hinges, screws, and lenses pre-cut. But we also have another mold just for the temples. So you can get completely different color temples, however you want. And then we press the temples and we give you the little tiny screwdrivers. It's kind of a challenge if you haven't done it much with the hinges, and you can fasten them all yourselves. Actually, being a photographer, it reminds me a lot of shooting on film. If you're old enough, you would remember actually going to develop film and not knowing what you shot until you got it. So when you're popping the melted plastic out of the frame, it's actually kind of exciting because you're like, oh, this one came out really cool. Look at the swirl right here, right? This really color swirl. Oh, it's perfect. So it's a kind of exciting reveal. And then we heat up your frame just a little bit to make it a little bit more malleable once you've already made it. And then we have the lenses you can choose. We have like a neutral gray and then an amber color. We have polarized, non-polarized. And then you can try your hand at popping the lenses in, or we can help you do it.
Yeah, because I was wondering about the actual color and how it works with the mold. So I can bring in various colors of plastic, but there's that element of surprise that will always remain, right? I don't know exactly how they'll come together.
Yeah, and I don't either. So we can put all those colors in the tube, but we kind of have an idea of what color might come out. But where we're getting all the little swirls, and if we can get this perfect gray mixed with the blue, is going to be a bit of a challenge. So sometimes we go through frames and they're just like, nope, and we'll just do another one, right? And then we can break down the frame we made, we can grind it up again, and then use that again.
Do-over.
Yeah.
It also makes me think of those old days in school doing spin art. You know, you kind of know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But until the wheel stops turning and you see what you've got, you don't really know what you've got.
Yeah, I think that is a perfect analogy. You can bring your colors and stuff, but you don't know where the colors are going to fall, right? Yeah. But you have an idea of what colors are going to mix, right?
Well, and you mentioned having a lot of plastic on hand. It sounds like you might be receiving donations.
We've had a bunch of people that know of our shop from the area bring in plastic. And we have buckets of plastic, like more than I could single-handedly make for a while. I was kind of surprised how much plastic really just flooded us without asking.
Yeah, as you said, we can do beach cleanups every weekend and still have more to do.
Yeah.
Talk about the machinery. Is this something you source?
Yeah, so I mean, that's the beauty of the internet, right? Like, no matter what idea you have, there's probably like 100 people that have thought of it before. So I was researching like crazy. I found one company out of Spain that had drawn up plans for a mold and a machine. And then I sourced the plans, which, I mean, the plans were really just a giant glue gun. So I got the plans from them, but then we completely modified them because I didn't want to have to bring in material. I just wanted to build with what we already had in Hawaii. This was not easy to do, by the way. Just build something, a one of one in Hawaii, it just like doesn't happen. Like most, and please tell me if I'm wrong, please tell me where the engineers are that are building one of ones, because I have a lot of things I want to build, but it's not very cost effective to do that. But I found a crazy enough engineer that was able to help me. You know, he had plenty of the metals and we redesigned things to fit exactly how we wanted to do it. And then just the look of the machine too. I wanted the machine to look cool because I feel like that's part of the story, right? It's kind of a cool contraption to see. And then designing a lever, we designed a lever so that we could apply maximum force. But I mean, if you've ever used a glue gun, it's basically that. The glue is the plastic, right? And it just heats it up, pull the trigger, it forces it through a nozzle, and then that pours into the mold. But now that we have the mold's easy that you can 3D scan it. And then the idea is you can 3D scan it, you can make little adjustments. So we started with two different shapes. We have kind of like a Wayfarer shape, which I think Ray-Ban made pretty popular, and then more of a, like a circular shape. And the Wayfarer one is a bit larger, and then the circular shape's a bit smaller. So everyone, nobody has the same size face. And that's the crazy thing about frames. That's why there's so many, because everybody's face shape, you wouldn't think it, but they all feel a little different. We found these to be the most two common shapes, and they pretty much, one or the other will fit most anybody.
And giving people a chance to wear frames that are made from plastic that used to be on their hometown beach that is no longer there.
Yeah, exactly.
That was HPR's D.W. Gibson talking with Brian Daniel Moore from Out to Sea, an optometry office in Kailua that offers the chance to turn beach plastic into eyeglass frames. When we recently checked in with Moore, he told us that the business has grown by 50% and that he continues to experiment with new additives to create a stronger, more flexible plastic. If you're just joining the conversation, we're airing a special broadcast about marine debris. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
Support for HPR comes from Blue Note Hawaii. Five for Fighting, the songwriter and pianist John Androsik performs songs such as Superman, It's Not Easy, February 3rd and 4th in two sets nightly. BlueNoteHawaii.com.
Greetings, I'm Lulu Solares, your new Friday night host on After Hours, Hawaii Public Radio's new weeknight late night music space, where each night brings a different host, genre, and point of view after dark. Join me for Mundo Reggae, Worldwide Reggae, past and present. Music to soundtrack your life after hours. Fridays 10 p.m. to midnight on HBR One.
Support for HPR comes from the Scheidler College of Business at UH Manoa, offering a Master of Accounting program. Learn more at scheidler.hawaii.edu.
Welcome back to our Hanaho show about marine debris on The Conversation. Here on HPR One, we recently featured Mark Cunningham, well-respected as a waterman. He was recently inducted into the Swimmers Hall of Fame. And these days, the retired city lifeguard and champion body surfer spends his time in the ocean looking for marine debris. His snorkel adventures have netted scores of everyday items, and he turns that trash into treasure, creating sculptures with a message. Cunningham took time out to give us a guided tour of his stash at his East Honolulu hideaway. It was quite the collection.
Yeah. Plastic pollution. It's our contemporary society, and here's the remains of it. And these all came off our windward beaches. Anywhere between Makapu and Kahuku, that windward side just collects it like a magnet. Breaks my heart. But I occasionally incorporate this into art. Art, of course, is in the eye of the beholder. But when I incorporate it, it's to raise awareness about why is all this stuff washing up on our beaches?
I see down here on the bottom shelf, golf balls.
Bins and bins. Yeah, golfers like to hit their golf balls into the ocean. And I love to go snorkeling, and I find them. And what's so beautiful is you see how smooth this is because it's been rolling around on the bottom of the sea, been completely wet sanded. And once again, that's getting back to what I've said many times. I love seeing what Mother Nature and the passage of time does to these man-made objects of ours.
And you've got floats?
Lots of blue plastic floats, obviously. I'm investing in the future. I think these are going to be the glass balls of the future. And so I'm getting ahead of the curve. Joking.
You do have glass, bins of glass.
Big, yeah, this heavy-duty, thick glass that I found offshore Waikiki. I think it might have come from the old Waikiki Aquarium back in the day, unless a big boat ran aground there. Or the old Queen Surf Entertainment venue that used to be there. Maybe they had big glass doors that broke and somehow got chucked out to sea. but I will mount surfboard fins on those on occasion. These are my favorite. I bought these in a secondhand store, and they're wooden floats with Japanese kanji on them. And I've had friends look, and it's the names of the family or the name of the company, but before glass balls, there were wooden floats. And after the glass balls, along came all these plastic and styrofoam floats.
And you've got just...
And I've got this crazy collection of rope. And once again, I'll do an installation one day of all of this. I call it industrial fishing gear. Most of it is when those huge trawlers are laying miles and miles of lines and hooks. Things wash overboard, things get chucked overboard, and they float and tangle up on the reef, and these are the ones that I find on the beach. It breaks my heart, but that's part of it.
And you've got more golf balls
baby abalone. What's fun about those, I found those, but not in the ocean. I found them at a garage sale in New Valley. It was a server from Michelle's restaurant, and Michelle's restaurant had baby Kona abalone aquaculture from the Big Island. And this server saved all the shells. Now I've got them.
That's incredible.
And what do we got over here? And here's some of my swim fins. Body surfing was one of my first loves with the ocean. And so these are just weird, unusual pairs that I have collected and hung on to. And then here's a garbage can full of fishing nets, remains of fishing nets, the ghost nets, they call them. And they do a lot of damage to the environment. More styrofoam floats. Know where your poke bowl came from.
What got you started into actually creating art? You've just collected marine debris.
Right. My mentor, my sensei, is a wonderful contemporary artist in Honolulu, John Koga. And John came to our house one day, and Katie and I had a pile of fins, but it was artistically put together. Of surfboard fins, we had a couple thousand in there, and it was about 4 feet tall, just held in place with gravity and strength. And John looks at me and goes, Mark, you're an artist, get busy. And I've been collecting these things for a long time. This is like the marine debris. I'll take you downstairs to the garage where the surfboard fin collection is. Okay. And it's that love of surfing of mine that really got me going. But all these things are gifts from the sea. I joke that I have fun 4 times with this whole process. The first time is when Katie and I can go snorkeling. We're in the ocean, we're getting pushed around, we're getting our exercise, whether we find any treasures or not, doesn't matter. We're in the ocean having fun. The second time, as much as possible, I try to mount my art on man-made lumber that's been washed ashore and it's been, has wormholes in it, it's been beaten up and weathered and what have you. Occasionally I find interesting wood on the side of the road too, but I like repurposing it. So beach combing, that's where all this came from, the floats and nets, what have you here.
Off in the corner, you've got an aquarium full of
nothing. Surfboard fins, those are all surfboard fins. More where those came from. Third time I have fun is when I finally go downstairs into the studio, garage studio, and try to find a little rhyme or a reason or a pattern or what object is going to go on what piece of wood and how I'm going to put it together. And the third time I have fun, occasionally people give me money for it.
We are here in your garage.
Yes.
And you have more bins full of stuff. So what's in this first bin?
Lots of stuff. This one here is the watch collection. And hands down, Casio watches are the favorite of swimmers and surfers in Hawaii. But they come off and straps or screws, things fall apart. And I have Timexes that keep on ticking sometimes. And Nixon watch, a favorite band with the surfers for many years, are in here. But I haven't counted them, but I'm guessing there are several hundred in here. In the next bin in the electronics department, we have some iPhones and other telephone cases. The electronic department rolls into the GoPro department. And lots of found GoPros. Lifeguards all around the island have been collecting lost GoPros from visitors for many years. This big box, and it is a big box, hundreds and hundreds of pairs of sunglasses that have been found underwater. And ones like this that are very white and crusty, obviously underwater and getting growth on them for a long time. And then sometimes you find them and they're just about brand new. And I've made several pieces incorporating sunglasses over the years. snorkels, mask and snorkels. People lose, the waves knock them off, they sink, they can't find them. And I've got hundreds of masks here. I've got dozens and dozens of swim goggles that the swimmers lose and the waves knock off. My goodness, that's right next to the rice paddle collection, because not a lot, but a fair amount of rice paddles float and wash ashore on our shores. This is just a small bit of, these are like, I don't know, that marker stakes. When you're doing property lines or drawing straight lines on a job site or construction site. And once again, these started floating in 2 or 3 years after the tsunami in Japan. And several of them have Japanese calligraphy on them. And they're strong and they're sturdy and they've been floating for years in the ocean. Then they wash up encrusted. And then surfboard fins, so many surfboard fins. I've got them organized by color, by style, by the company that made them. I have thousands of surfboard fins. Surfers, screw your fins in. Very few boards have them resined in with fiberglass rope like they used to in the old days. They're two very popular fin systems, FCS and Futures, and they have these little bolt nuts that you have to tighten up. And if you don't, they wiggle loose eventually. You hit a rock or you run someone over, they pop out. What I really think pulls a lot of these fins out is the surfboard leash. If you've ever wiped out and had the surfboard leash around your ankle, you'll know, oh yeah, that could pull a fin off easily. These are crazy. It's a bucket full of Zoris. But what's
slippers.
What's crazy is that I brought these home from Indonesia. I went on a surf trip there to a spot called Dilan Garajagan, and the amount of litter on the beaches in Indonesia is just absolutely heartbreaking. They don't have the infrastructure to dispose of their trash, so it oftentimes gets chucked in a river and it washes out to sea, then gets blown ashore. But I'll make an art piece out of those slippers. Here's something interesting, Catherine. These are coring samples that I found, lava rock, basalt rock. I guess before they build high rises and certain structures, they've got to drill down and see what's underneath, how sturdy the sample is, and they pull up these coring samples. Some company chucked these into the ocean. They rolled them around and got this beautiful, smooth, wet sanded feel to them, and now they're in Mark's garage. What are and
oh gosh, propellers?
Props from boats.
Yeah, we have a few of those.
Oh, maybe the drone belongs in the electronics department.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a few of those. This is a specific bin of windsurf fins. They're pretty unique and larger and more different than the surfboard fins. But we have quite a few of those. And then the wood that I put it on. Like I say, sometimes, as much as possible, I try to find it beachcombing where it's been beat up, weathered, wet sanded, so to speak. And sometimes I find it on the side of the road when a neighbor's tearing down a fence or put a set of shelves out there, and I find an interesting color, pattern, or patina on it. We have so much stuff in our contemporary world that I see value in all these things. Someone worked really hard creating the lumber, cutting it and shipping it and painting it. And for it to just sort of be abandoned, I see these things and I say, they have a little more life in them.
Yeah, but the more weathered, the better.
Yeah, as I say, I'm 70 years old now, and I'm feeling pretty older and weathered. And so these things, the wood and these things that I find, show that passage of time. That so many of these surfboard fins and sunglasses and electronics, they're brand new, shiny, under a fluorescent light in an air-conditioned mall. And somehow they ended up in the bottom of the sea, and I found them, and it's that proverbial dust to dust, ashes to ashes.
Talk about the message, though, that you're trying to underscore as you rescue these things and make them into something new again.
A lot of the marine debris, the plastic pollution, the nets and the floats, that breaks my heart. That industrial fishing that goes on to capture seafood for all of us to eat, that there's so much waste byproduct that simply gets chucked overboard, floats in the sea for years and years, tears up a reef if it gets washed ashore. Lots of marine life is getting tangled in it, and eventually it washes ashore on our beach, and then what? H power, I guess, some of it gets burned, but there's just so much stuff in the world. So much Opala, and so much of the marine debris isn't from Hawaii. It's from all the countries bordering the North Pacific. That North Pacific gyre just rotates around a strong current, and things, depending on winds and storms, it blows ashore on our windward shores on all the Hawaiian islands. I don't know what the answer is to use less and less stuff, or find things that are sturdier, or find a better way to dispose of things, as opposed to just chucking it in the ocean and out of sight, out of mind. I hope some young person is listening to this and can find a solution for us.
Basically, you are using your art in this stage in your life to help clean up the ocean.
That's part of it, yeah. It's a very selfish pursuit. It gives me joy snorkeling and beachcombing to find all these objects. And then the peace of mind sitting in this garage studio trying to find a little rhyme or a reason on what looks good, what fin is going to go on the perfect piece of wood. The simplest thing I can do is one fin and one piece of wood. And I will spend hours and hours trying to find just the right fin. Does it go this way? Does it go this way? Or does it go this way? Maybe this side of the wood is more, look at the contrast there. And it's just a meditative Zen exercise trying to find something that pleases my eye. And if others enjoy it too, terrific.
Yeah, it kind of saves your life.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, I love, like I said, the Hollyhock Art Festival is one of my favorite venues. And sharing it with the public and meeting friends and exchanging stories. And, of course, now I have people donating things to me. They see them and they go, this is cool. I'm going to pick it up. What am I going to do with it? And maybe Mark wants it. And
yeah.
Don't tell Katie, but I've brought another thing home.
That was an extensive tour of waterman Mark Cunningham's garage and studio. It was a bit of theater for the mind. To see pictures of the rescued marine debris, check out our website, hawaiipublicradio.org. We finish our Hanaho show on trash collected from the ocean, diving into the work of Hawaii artist Jodi Endicott. Her whimsical sculptures of monk seals and penguins and polar bears have been featured around the state. She uses marine debris to highlight the effect that plastics have on our environment. We visited her Nu'uanu studio last month to talk about her passion.
What got me started was just seeing and knowing that back in the 70s, we were talking about what we were doing to the environment then, and now we've done it. What really got me was when my son was in middle school and we were listening to the music. I asked him, I go, why is your music so angry? Hurt me, hate you, hate me. He said, Mom, what do you think? The world is melting. And I thought, when I was in high school, it was man against man. Now it's man against nature. That's a really big enemy. And it's our doing, and what can we do to change it? So then I testified a couple of years ago on banning the single-use plastics here after the bags were banned. And what was really motivated me now and then was that when I went in to talk to the city council and testify, most of the kids in there were in high school, and there were probably about 40 of them. And we had to keep rearranging the order of who was going to go next, because Jack had to get to soccer practice and somebody else had to get to piano and somebody else had to go somewhere else. And so I just got up and I had made a little fish out of the foam containers, the plastic ones. And I said, would you eat this? You know, and of course, no, right? And then I brought a Coke bottle from my honeymoon that I got on Kauai. And I told him that this is what we used to do. And on the bottom, it said bottled in Lihue, and that we used to pay a deposit. It was glass. We filled it up. We drank it. It was refilled. And then we turned it back in. And it worked. And we didn't need plastic for that. And some of the kids clapped then. And then I turned around and I apologized to the kids. I'm old. And I said, you know what? I am so sorry. You should not be here today. You should be enjoying your high school years at sports and music and all the things that move you and that you're learning for your future. And instead, here you are. And I said, if we don't do this now, when are we going to? And the city council passed it. And when I walked out, a couple of the students thanked me. And it just motivated me. When something like that happens, you see that it's not all I do. I think in my work, I bring people together. And because we're so divided, I feel the plastics are something we can agree on. Nobody wants to eat plastics. We don't want all this plastics. Another experience that happened was with Judith Inc. She used to be an EPA director for Ohio. And when they had the train wreck of all the chemicals, I was on the mainland and I just happened to turn on the TV and I hear her. And she said, we don't need these plastics. These chemicals that were on this train are completely related to the plastics that are in the ocean right now. And I just went, and I'd already been doing some of the marine debris work. And I just went, oh my gosh. So I did her program. I think it was like 2 or 3 days. And she's a real leader in this. She started Beyond Plastics. And it's all about not having those chemicals. But it's just crept up over time. And it's doing a lot of damage to us and our children and our environment and our different cultures and, of course, nature.
Right. You wanted to stop.
I wanted to stop.
And we're surrounded by your sculptures, you know, your seals, you've got penguins, you've got a polar bear. The message is, this is killing us.
This is killing us. Yeah, they're finding Hawaii is a leader. And a leader in that at Jabson, at our medical school, they've been looking at placentas for several years now. And at first, it wasn't all the placentas having plastic in them. But now it's all of them. That's pretty heavy to be tainted with plastics when you're not even born yet.
And you are looking to really have some long-lasting impact. Your artwork has been shown at Outrigger, on the Big Island, Kahilu Theater, numerous places downtown. Mm-hmm. But you're looking for, what, a stage where you can reach people and change behavior.
Yes, that's what I want to do. If we were able to put these sculptures on the beach and people were able to be photographed with them, then maybe a pop-up around Waikiki with some other artists that we could do and just really saturate and empower people with this message that we have to do something about this. It was dust around the world that they can see that dropped in from a comet, and that was the demise of a lot of living things here on the earth, including the dinosaurs. Our time, they're going to look at years from now or decades or whatever, and what they'll see is a ring of plastics around the world, in the land, in the water, in the air. I don't know what that says about us, except we're not taking care of ourselves or each other or our world.
What's your next project?
I'm getting ready to do paintings for Punahou. They've asked me to have 10 paintings there, and it helps the school to be able to offer their tuition and offset things. And yeah, so that's what I'm doing. Most recently, the sculptures that were over by the Frank Fossey building up on the rise across from the police station, the three people in the inner tubes, they were just moved actually to the front of Frank Fossey's building, and you can see them from King Street. So I recently just put them together and help that process going. And there is one that I want to do. I want to do three stacked penguins, a large one at the bottom with large plastics inside, a middle one, medium-sized one, that is standing on top of that other one, the larger one, and then a smaller one that would have the really small plastics in it. And that's what I'd like to have out there. And the other thing that I'm working on is finding sponsors. We want to go along with this journey. And this last several years, I've dedicated myself to do this work It's not something I'm selling. It requires, I could do so much more if I had some sponsors, and if people want to get behind and offer their guidance, I would welcome that. Because I think it would talk about Hawaii being a leader again. We were the leaders in passing the 1%, and the rest of the nation followed us. And what can we do out here? You know, what we're doing with HPU and the Center for Marine Debris Research, they're looking into doing buildable materials made out of the nets. What else can we do? I want to find a 3D printer that can print marine debris plastics and do a series of these sculptures so that they're additions. Then I can send them further out into the world and do things on film, do Zooms. There's so much that if we get everybody connected and if we all work together, we can really change this.
That was public sculpture artist Jody Endicott. And right now she's working on a long project that follows the money from the stock market to the plastic market and is looking for sponsors. For pictures of some of her work, check out our website later today. That does it for today's Marine Debris Hanaho Showcase. We'd like to hear from you. Got a marine debris story to share? Call our talkback line. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can find the conversation page on our website, hawaiipublicradio.org, and you can find the conversation as a podcast on Spotify or Apple. Our program is produced by Maddie Bender, Lillian Song, and Kevin Allen, with support from D.W. Gibson, Savannah Harriman-Pote, and the HPR Digital team. Our Backyard Quiz theme, written for us by John DeMello. Our theme music, courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up the conversation. Thank you.